Boy, there are so many things that are going on this weekend, in addition to the fact that we are winding down on Passover, and of course we've got Easter coming up this weekend, but we also have a number of other events of a local nature that are taking part in the Capital Region, and we'll be talking about one of those today right here on Perspectives. Hope you've had a good week so far. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for tuning in. And if you would like to call into Perspectives, it's easy to do. 414-1234 is the number locally. If it's long distance from you to us, it's 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. If you want to send us a tweet, that's fine too. It is at WFSU Perspective. Boy, for 14 years now, the city of Tallahassee has hosted a terrific, it began as a local, then became a regional, and I'm pretty soon going to be international, perhaps even intergalactic, art show and sale called the Festival in the Park, which is our open-air art gallery. It's the Chain of Parks Art Festival, which is sponsored every year by the Lemoyne Center for the Visual Arts. And this year, bigger and better than ever. We have not only some of the prime organizers of that event today, but we've also got two contributing artists. And if you are of an artistic bent and would like to weigh in, boy, we'd love to hear from you, too. So let's say hi to the folks we got around this here table. Ann Kozielinski, of course, Executive Director of the Lemoyne Center for the Visual Arts.
And morning, Tom. How are you?
Good to see you again, Ann.
Good to see you, man.
All right. Well, and also good to see Kelly Dozier, Lemoyne Board Member, Mad Dog Construction Senior Vice President.
Great to be here, Tom.
Building on a tradition of excellence, right?
Absolutely, and very excited about the weekend.
We've got some artists, too. Nancy Jefferson, a local raku specialist. And if you don't know what raku is, we're going to tell you in exquisite detail a little bit later on. And good to see you, too, Nancy.
Good to see you, Tom.
And on the telephone, we have Leslie Peebles, originally from Hackensack, New Jersey, and then moved out to Suwanee County, Florida. She's going to be bringing her line-of-cut relief prints and wood-cut and all that kind of stuff. It is great to have you on board, too, Leslie.
Great to be here.
Well, let's start with you, Leslie, as long as we're in that neck. How did you get involved in line-of-cut and wood-cut prints and that kind of thing? That is not a real common form of artistic expression nowadays.
No, it's really not. It is a real vintage medium, really popular early to mid-century, and then it kind of fell by the wayside, especially when the Jeep Play came out, you know, the inkjet print. It had kind of a detrimental effect on traditional, original printmaking. I got a degree in art from Newcomb in New Orleans, part of Tulane, in drawing and painting. And then had a family, got a master's in art education. And my first job teaching out in Interlochen, the high school teacher next door said that she absolutely hated linoleum, and she didn't want to do it with her students. And did I want all these supplies for my middle school students? And I said, yes. And I just fell in love with it because, you know, not only did my students love it, but I could see its potential as a medium where I could produce only original pieces and not do reproduction, because, of course, my professors had really prejudiced me towards reproduction. Although I'm not so prejudiced now, it's just that, you know, art professors don't have to actually make a living selling their art. but, you know, at the time, it just seemed like the perfect thing. I could put as much time as I wanted into a piece, and I could sell only original art, because in printmaking, in traditional printmaking, each print is an original piece, you know, each print in the edition. And, of course, I also do a lot of hand painting in the pieces, so, you know, they're just beautiful, and it's a very meditative medium, and I have run with it.
Well, we want to talk to you about kind of the nuts and bolts of how you do that, because if you have not seen an artist, a printmaker, work in either linoleum, and yes, it can be used for something other than a flooring material, or a piece of wood that is then a flat piece of wood that is carved out and then prints made from that. We'll be talking to Leslie about how that happens here a little bit later on. But let's get into the hot stuff, if you will, most literally, when we're talking about a form of ceramic called raku. And Nancy Jefferson, what is raku?
Well, raku is a form of firing. It comes from the 16th century in Japan. Originally started as part of a tea ceremony there. And, of course, we Americanized it here. And it's very raku in Japanese actually means instant gratification. And it is. We take a piece and put it in the kiln. It's glazed. We take it up to temperature around 1900, 2000 degrees. We open the kiln then, and it's all glowing. And we use tongs and pull it out and put it in combustible material, like sawdust or I'm using a lot of
recycled paper.
Yeah, recycled paper. And it all catches on fire. It's just wonderful, you know. Then we cover it, and that forms a reduction chamber. And you wait 15 minutes and take it out, and there it is.
Now why would you take out a glowing hot piece of pottery and throw it into combustible material? I mean, you have this nice, even glaze, and wouldn't that just mess it up?
Well, it just makes it 10 times better. You pull it out and put it in reduction, and it all catches on fire, and then you cover it, and the fire is there. It wants oxygen. So if you have a copper glaze, it'll go into the glaze and pull the oxygen to the surface, and then you get this wonderful copper effect. And then the carbon goes into the glaze and into the bare clay, and you get that wonderful crackle look.
Oh, and it sounds like every piece is totally unique, because how could you duplicate that?
You can't, and you have very little control, and that's what makes it so fun. It's up to the kiln gods. We say.
Well, this is just an example of some of the stuff that's going on, of course, at Chain of Parks Art Festival. The printmaking of Leslie Peebles, the raku pottery of Nancy Jefferson, and Ann Kozaliski. There's a lot more that's going on this weekend, too, besides just these two artists, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's 150 artists from all over the country and internationally. Is that correct, Kelly?
We do have one coming from Israel.
So we are one step away from being intergalactic. We are international now. So.
Well, this has grown so massively. And Kelly, you can certainly attest to this. I mean, 14 years in, and it began as a nice little thing, people bringing their art down to the park. And it was a fun thing. And it was this. Not exactly modest, but you can't say that it has reached the level that it is now.
Right, and everything has to start somewhere. So it did start modestly, but there has been a constant goal to improve and grow the show in quality. It's not about quantity, it's about quality. So this is a fine art festival. That's what makes it different from all the other wonderful festivals and art events that we have in town throughout the year. This is the only fine art festival. It's a juried festival. So lots of artists apply, and then they go through a juring process. So only the best are actually accepted and come to the show. And each year it gains in reputation with the artists. So more better artists apply. And so we have better artists and better art. And it's just a wonderful opportunity for people to come down and meet the artists who produce this work, talk to them personally, find out how they make their art, even develop a relationship with the artists. You know, for me, that's very important with the art that I collect, that I know the artists who made it and who they are and how important art is in their life. So this it's an amazing opportunity, and I think because of the quality and the ongoing efforts to make it better every year, it has grown.
Leslie Peoples, how did you find out about this particular festival? Because there are so many around the country that you could go to. Well, what about this one?
Well, actually, a friend of mine, because a lot of us artists that do the show circuit, you know, we tell each other what are the good shows and, you know, what are the shows that are going to be good for us. And another artist said, oh, you should try this Lemoyne Chain of Parks. It's kind of under the radar. It's not, you know, one of the you know, big name shows. It's like the main sale in St. Pete's the same weekend. But it's a great show, and I think the people there would love your work. And so I applied, and I got in, and I've been, you know, really, really happy with the response to my work. I think this is going to be my fourth year.
Wow. Yeah, and what about you, Nancy? Because we had bumped into each other at a, three, 4 years ago, I think, at one of the Chain of Parks Art Festival. How many years you've been coming?
I believe this will be my sixth year. And it's great because every year I get to show new work. And it's really a challenge to change and keep growing.
Well, particularly now, because it seems as though, I mean, this is just coming from the outside, but the aesthetics seem to be changing somewhat. A lot of what was traditional art now is becoming modified, just like what Leslie does with her prints. It's not just you carve it, you put a piece of paper down, squish it onto the surface, and then you have a real nice print, you know, in one or two ink colors. Now you've got a lot of multimedia stuff that seems to be going on. Does that seem happening?
You know, it really is, and it's because it's of the availability. You know, the internet has made materials accessible to everyone, unique materials. YouTube, of course, has provided a venue that artists can go to and or anyone can go to and see how it's done. So it's out there and sparking inspiration and creativity all over the place.
Well, we are going to continue our conversation here momentarily on the Chain of Parks Art Festival happening this weekend in downtown Tallahassee with Kelly Dozier and Ann Kozeliski and Nancy Jefferson and Leslie Peoples right here on Perspectives 414-1234, 800-926-8809 and perspectives@wfsu.org. is the email address. We are back on Perspectives, the Chain of Parks Art Festival happening this weekend in downtown Tallahassee in the Chain of Parks, which extends through the downtown area. 150-some artists with all kinds of stuff that will be available, not only for enjoyment, but also available for purchase. And that's one thing we got to get into, guys, because as soon as you say art sale, fine art means fine money, like lots and lots of money. What are the price points on this stuff?
Oh, the artists are going to be prepared at all price ranges. You know, they have their masterworks, of course, that are worth every penny. But they also have their bread and butter pieces. I mean, they know that in order to spread their name, they have to have art into the hands of the people. And they're going to have pieces that are affordable, just as beautiful as their masterworks, but at that price point that everyone can afford.
Okay. Kelly Dozier, you talked about your collection. How many pieces do you have in your personal Dozier gallery there?
Wow. I've never actually counted, but I've run out of wall space. So actually, I'm waiting for Lemoyne to have another art auction so I can take some of those pieces and donate and get some more wall space. But I love it. I just love finding those pieces that speak to me. And that's really important. And like Ann said, they're all price points. This is real art, but you can get some for $25 to $5,000. So if you're just starting your collection, come on down and get that smaller piece maybe this year. And then next year you'll love that so much you'll go up another size and get a little more. And that's kind of how you catch the bug. And then before you know it, you're living with beautiful art.
I was going to say that sounds like a very close analogy to, you know, beginning and maintaining a drug addiction. I don't know. But it can become obsessive about this stuff, particularly if you are looking to really personalize your home. My wife and I are big fans of HGTV. And of course, we, you know, looking all the time and drooling over the houses we know we can never have. But one of the major components of these houses, even if they are much more modest, is the appreciation for art that seems to be now rampant, whether you are in a small, you know, one bedroom apartment or you've got a 5,000 square foot McMansion out there somewhere. Is just if you can bring that to your space, it just makes it so much more livable.
And personal too. I mean, you can go and you can buy reproduced work at many retail outlets. But when you find a piece of work, like Kelly says, that speaks to you, it's going to continue the conversation when you get it home. And you should never hesitate. If you're somewhere and you think, oh, I just love that, but I just don't know where I'll put it, it'll tell you where to put it. When you get home, it will show you where it needs to be, and you may move something out of the way, but that's okay because that rotation of energy is going to keep your life fresh and vibrant, and just like the new piece of artwork will.
Leslie Peoples, since this is radio, it is really tough to, I guess, show these things. Now, we are going to do live streaming of this program at some point, and I'm sure we will be putting up visual stuff on the web to accompany it. But talk a little bit about your printmaking and what it looks like for the benefit of folks who may never have seen a line of cut print or even a woodblock print.
Well, the first step in the process is creating drawings. And before I can create drawings, I have to have experiences. And so what I do is I draw from, you know, the gorgeous wild places and the wild animals and my yard. Like Koi Pond was inspired by creating a koi pond in my yard. And then I create drawings. Once I create the drawing, it's transferred to the linoleum or the wood block. I sometimes draw directly on the block, and then I use my U gouges and V gouges, and I carve out everything. And really, the process of carving, a lot happens then because it's, like I said, a very meditative process, and I kind of, you know, am with that space, and lots of detail starts to emerge because being the kind of ADD person that I am, it really slows me down and helps me really develop the vision and the look of the piece and the textures and all that detail. And then I roll the block with black ink, or actually I've started mixing my inks and, you know, creating some really luscious, deep, rich colors that I print with. I roll that out with brayers and roll the block and dampen this beautiful handmade paper that I use and crank it through an etching press. And the press really pushes the paper into the block, into the carved out part, so it gets this wonderful embossing. And then they're hand painted. And just one other thing, just to add to what Ann was talking about, I think people are addicted to beauty and inspiration. You know, I think that's why I have to buy art, is because I crave that beauty in my surroundings. And you know, fine art, real art, has a soulfulness that reproduction just can't quite ever get, you know, because soul is the quality of one's lived experience. And, of course, you know, art that's been made by hand has been lived with that artist. It's been, you know, touched and produced over this period of time. And so, by definition, it has soul.
That's a great description. And while you were describing the process also, I was thinking, wow, you have to really be thinking in terms of counterintuitive, because if you are drawing something, which is the way you start with your line of cut or your etching process, where you make a mark, that's where the dark area or the positive area is. But when you start to carve, where you make the mark is the negative space where the lines won't be.
Yeah, when I teach it, that's the hardest thing to get across. Some people get it and others just can't quite wrap their brain around it, is leaving the lines and carving out around the lines. And so it is. And unfortunately, my brain is wired a little different.
Well, it's been said that most artists have a different kind of wiring mechanism there, which actually leads to the creativity, because artists have to kind of look at things differently than most folks do. As far as Raku is concerned, or just pottery in general, Nancy, you had mentioned before that the Raku process was very much tied into the Japanese tea ceremony. What's that all about? And what's the connection?
Well, in the 16th century, there was a master potter who the emperor at the time had asked him to for tea bowls. And when he came up with the firing technique of making it and putting it in the fire and pulling it out, where you would instantly be able to have this tea ceremony. I think it says what Leslie was saying about each participant of this ceremony has made their own vessel, and it just makes it all that more special.
And part of the tea ceremony is actually the admiring of the tea bowl. We have a tea ceremony at Lemoyne every year. This will be our third year. It'll be next month. And after you have drank the tea, you are to admire the bowl. You turn the bowl so that you can see all sides, and the irregularities are the most beautiful part of these bowls. It's the soul of the clay, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you're making it yourself, so you have a personal connection to the piece of art that you are admiring. It actually came from your hand.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, there's that soul that Leslie was talking about there. And the fact that – and you'd said that you now have a tea ceremony at mm-hmm. the Lemoyne. There are other things going on besides the Chain of Parks Art Festival every year and a tea ceremony. So what are some of the other things happening at Lemoyne?
Well, of course, we have 10 different exhibits every year. Currently, we have the Digital Photography Guild showing at the gallery. And next weekend, the 26th, we are going to have a workshop on taking better pictures with your cell phone and digital camera. Robert Overton will be instructing that. It's 1 to 3 on Saturday. And it's $20 for non-members, $15 for members. And it's going to be hands-on. Bring your phone, bring your camera. I think they'll even talk about iPads and things like that. And Robert is going to show you how to, as he says, follow the light. So we're going to have that. And next month we have 3 guilds. We have SAGA, Southern Art Glass Alliance, Paper Guild, and the Seven Hills Hand Weavers. We're going to have a lot of hands-on with that, and we're very excited about having Ken Van Rowan, the director of the Master Craftsman Studio, will be coming on May 22nd and speaking about the transition, evolution of stained glass and not morphing into, but the resurgence of architectural glass. So we try to keep everything happen at Le Moyne. Very excited about a series we're working on this summer. The last four summers, we have been doing a series called the Long Art Summer, which every Saturday a different artist would come in and speak to their media, you know, talking about the Raku or the Linotype. This year, we're giving back to the artists. I've spoke with Rick Rice, a well-known graphic artist and professor here in town who's retired now. And he is going to be working with us to develop a series for the artists, how to help the artists prepare, produce product that will help their work be more professional, such as logo design, brochure design, letterhead, things like that. So we're going to give back to the artists this summer for the Long Art Summer. And we have a surprise pop-up gallery coming, but I'm not going to tell you anything about that.
Oh, but I'm sure we will learn at some
point. You will. It'll be out there.
Kelly Dozier, this kind of leads to the question then, why is art important? It's great for the artists, and it's we put nice things on our wall or on our table or whatever, but in the bigger context of the community, why is this a good thing?
Well, I guess art speaks differently to each person, but artists are small business people. You know, not that they're small people, but they have small businesses, and it's important to the economy. They produce works and sell them, and then support their families and buy groceries and so on and live amongst us, and producing beautiful items that improve our life and quality of life. There's public art out there that's for everyone to enjoy, and you can see the difference even in Cascades Park. There's some art out there. I think there wants to be more art out there for people to enjoy, but for instance, the Korean Monument is a piece of art. And now that everyone can see it, it really has attracted attention, and it expands people's experience to be there and be a part of the art. That's the best way I can describe it right now. Maybe Ann can add more to it. But, I think it's just important for everyone, quality of life.
Okay. Well, we also have an art educator. I mean, there are art educators here all around this table. But Leslie Peebles, as an art teacher in the Florida public school system for a number of years, if I could ask you, Leslie, why is it important for kids to learn art? I mean, we're looking now at math and technology and science and all that, the STEM courses, as it was, and there's really maybe not as much of an emphasis on the visual and the performing arts in our schools as there used to be. Why is this important for kids?
Oh, gosh. It's important because, well, the soulfulness issue. I mean, kids need something that is meaningful and real and hands-on, and they need to create with their hands and their minds and their bodies. You know, it's something that's incredibly important to their lived experience. But even more important is what happens in the brain when kids do that. The more kids create and work in both hemispheres of their brain, you know, it builds the connections and it builds their brain power really exponentially. They're able to compete and produce in society and be creative. You know, it helps people in the entirety of their lives. I mean, it takes creativity to live well, to live fully, to live, you know, with soulfulness. You know, it just it has an impact on everything. And I think creative education is something that American business needs more than anything else. I think it's a strength that we need to really, really exploit. And you know, I just feel like the emphasis on testing takes so much away from children and schools and teachers. You know, it limits and keeps everything to the rote education. And while producing, you know, workers that can handle boredom is one aim, there's so much more that our educational system can do for people as human beings.
Well, given the fact that our schools, again, because of the priority shift of recent years into, for better or worse, things that have to be quantified and tested for and all that, and kind of leaving the arts off to the side. That's why, I guess, Nancy Jefferson, someone like you working at LeMoyne can kind of supplement that part of the educational system, and kids, grown-ups, can come to you and say, hey, I need something more.
Well, I teach adult classes, except in summer. We have summer camp there, and I get the teenagers. But my adult, many times they've said, my adult students say, boy, this is cheaper than my psychiatrist. And it's true. You come there, and all of a sudden 2 hours are up, and they're like, well, what happened? They lose themselves in the clay. And the same thing for the teenagers. I think it's a wonderful venue for them because they're always on these electronic devices. And when they come to my class, those devices are put away, and they start expressing themselves in a very, I think, a manner that gives them self-worth, in a sense. And then when I take them out to the raccoon pit and we start firing, then they're like, wow, this is great.
And anything that catches fire usually has the full attention of teenagers. I don't know why that is. But we're talking to folks from the LeMoyne Chain of Parks Art Festival, connected therein, organizers and artists, 414-1234-800-926-8809. Right back. If you were thinking of going out of town this weekend but really hadn't made a final commitment to that decision yet, you might want to hang around because the Chain of Parks Art Festival is this Saturday and Sunday in downtown Tallahassee. 150-some artists with all kinds of great goodies for you to enjoy visually but also to purchase at all price points. And we have a couple of great artists with us here on Perspectives, along with LeMoyne's Ann Kozaliski and Kelly Dozier. And ready to take your call at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. We got a call, and that is Cheryl, and she's on line one. Hey, Cheryl.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Hey, could not be doing better. How about you?
I am terrific. It's a beautiful day. Hi, Ann. Hi, Kelly.
Hey, Cheryl. How are you?
I can't wait for the show. I just wondered if you want to explain to folks how hard it is to get into the show, because you only picked 150 artists, and I'm pretty sure there were a whole bunch more that wanted to be in the show, including me.
Oh. that's true. We had the most artists apply this year than we've ever had, and the 150 artist number is one that the art festival committee decided on based on how many people come to the festival. We want to make sure that ratio of visitors and lookers and buyers is a good one with the number of artists, because artists have to travel. They have to do a lot of work to even be in the festival. And so we don't want to have too many artists where it spreads out our visitors too thin. So, and that's part of the quality aspect. So we have 150 that were admitted out of 240 that applied. So quite a few did not make the cut because we had so many applicants and such a high quality. And that doesn't mean those that didn't make it aren't high-quality artists. We also look for a variety. There's a number of considerations. We want a variety of artists, not too many of any one media. So that's another aspect of it. But we encourage those good artists to keep applying, and hopefully they'll get in as well.
Okay. And printmaker Leslie Peoples, let me just ask you, since you have been to so many shows and you are a repeat performer here at Chain of Parks, is this a pretty good show from your viewpoint?
It really is a great show. And I think that people in Tallahassee are hungry for great art. And a lot of cities around Florida have what we call promoter shows. And the promoters aren't as interested in taking care of the artists as the Lemoyne Center of the Arts is. And they tend to, put on a bunch of shows in an area, and it tends to water everything down. For example, Naples used to be fantastic, and then the promoter shows, there's one every weekend, and now the market is so watered down that the artists are selling maybe less than half of what they used to when they do a show down there. And Tallahassee is one of the places that's not burdened with a lot of promoter shows. And so when the Lemoyne show comes around, people are ready, and they show up and they buy.
Okay, so it's not an oversaturated – I'm sorry. It's not an oversaturated market then from your angle.
Correct.
Okay. Same thing that you're seeing, Nancy, as far as your material, that this is, you know, just a good showcase, a good place to not only display it but also to sell it?
It is. It's just wonderful. I had a phone call yesterday morning from a lady who said she and her husband bought several pieces from me 2 or 3 years ago, a certain Ikebana vessel for flower arranging. And the catalog had just come out in the paper yesterday morning, and she saw my name. She called, "Oh, I'm so glad, because we bought those to give away, but we kept them. So now we want to come and get more. Do you have them?" I said, "I do, but everything's one of a kind." But it was great. She said, "We'll be there Saturday."
Oh, well, you know, that's something we haven't even hit on. We've been talking about personal fulfillment and amassing a collection for yourself of various art that would be available through the Chain of Parks Art Festival. But if anyone is like my wife, who she's like a politician, you know, they start running the day after the election for the next election. Well, you know, the day after the holidays, she's immediately starting to acquire stuff for the next giveaway. And this is a good opportunity to start laying in some gift ideas as well, because everyone's looking for, oh, my gosh, what can be unique and
Absolutely.
Special and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I buy art for friends and family because I love the art. And some family members are a bit more open to it than others. And I look on those that maybe are not as the collector that the others are, as a unit that I can educate. I can share the wealth with them. That absolutely, you know, start thinking now. And everybody has one of those favorite pieces that maybe got nicked or cracked or bumped or something. And when that happens to me, I look at that as a positive opportunity to buy more.
You've always been such an incurable optimist, Ann Kozalewski.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely half full, always.
To the phones we go. Brian's on line 4. Thanks for your patience, Brian. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, you know, y'all were talking about science and math and how, like, curriculum is being, you know, shoved and pushed towards that direction, and, you know, they're lacking in the art. And I'm in no way, shape, or form a professional of art, but I was thinking, like, why can't, and I always think this way, why can't they bridge the gap and just combine stuff like that? Like, you know, a simple science test would be, you know, why do, when you mix red and blue, why does it turn purple? You know, I mean, I know that's, you know, simple, but the thought behind it is semi complex and would, you know, create, you know, a study in itself to, for, you know, younger students or people that would be interesting too.
Yeah, kind of like a synergy there. Well, we have some art educators here. Let's start with Leslie. Leslie, what kind of science or math or engineering could be incorporated into the art of printmaking?
Well, there's you know, there's a lot of physics involved in color theory. There's a lot of biologists are my biggest fan club. They love my pieces because of the attention to detail to what is in nature, to those kinds of you know, celebrating just how individual and beautiful of plants or animals or ecosystems are. And I think that the biological study and drawing go hand in hand. I know that that type of integrated learning is really popular. There's a lot of researchers working on, and it's difficult to integrate learning. It takes really fabulous teachers who can, you know, who are able to combine a lot of different subject matters and create units that really develop a student's knowledge in a lot of different ways. So you know, education really needs to start attracting the kinds of minds and the kinds of people that can synthesize knowledge and physical application and projects with you know, with student learning.
Well, just looking at your one print koi pond here while you were talking, I was just flashing on the fact that, my gosh, it's a biological study. It really is that you have an entire ecosystem right there in that one print.
Indeed.
Well, beyond that, we'll talk about maybe the physics and also the chemistry of ceramics, Nancy Jefferson. Boy, if you don't know chemistry, you're not going to do too well when you get into the art of ceramics, because it's very dependent on that.
It absolutely is. And today, it's very easy to just pick up the phone or go on the internet and buy your own glazes. But I make my own, and you have to have chemistry in your background in order to learn how to put it all together. Glaze is actually glass.
Yeah, that's right. Silica, alumina, clay bodies, all that kind of thing is incredibly complex when it comes into science. You could do an entire textbook just on ceramic glaze chemistry.
There are many out there, But also, think about the natural sciences, and my work is very organic and inspired by what I see, whether in the ocean or on a kayak or just walking to the mailbox and seeing a seed pod. And I think that's essential for young people to learn.
Yeah, because you're developing things like the observational skills and tactile abilities and those kinds of things. And that was part of the Lemoyne's charter, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. We have a huge education component at Lemoyne, and we are particularly very proud of our summer art camp program. We have our teachers are tasked by the education coordinator, Jennifer Infinger, to do the I'm blanking on what it is. They do their list of things that they're going to do. They're before the class. This is an educational thing. We don't babysit at our summer art camp. They are to come up with their lesson plan. And there it is. And they follow that. And there's always the educational component mixed in with it. And we have kids from pre-K to the teens in our summer art camp. And they always go away with some art history, some task that they have been brought in to complement one particular genre in transferring that into what you can do with paper towel rolls, you know. And this summer in particular, we're doing anime. We're bringing in digital science, and it's never ending. And we continue to challenge the students that we have and listen to what the students want and provide that opportunity for them.
Just like the digital photography, because I remember the old school photography where you would learn how to work a light box and all that kind of stuff.
And yeah. I never did get that.
Yeah, the stinky chemicals in the darkroom. I remember that kind of stuff too. But there's ever evolving aesthetic that we have now,
yes,
as art goes through the many changes which have been wrought by electronics, yeah, and computerization and all that kind of thing. So are you worried, Leslie Peebles, about being replaced by a computer?
No. In fact, I call my art the anti-digital art. It's not that I don't love digital art and that it's a wonderful medium, but I think that, the pendulum tends to swing back and forth between the handmade and the soulful, and that funky soulfulness and the high tech and the glisten of the new. So, and I think that printmaking is making a comeback. There's a lot of young people that are forming print cooperatives, and there's a new interest in the old, the vintage and the handmade and those arts that are, that take so much skill.
We may be falling out of love with a touch screen. Is that even possible?
I don't think so. No. There is a real movement with the digital artists who have been working very hard for respect. And the amount of time and energy that goes into creating a beautiful digital piece is equal to the other handmade arts. It's just a different media.
It's a different media, exactly. Yes, if it's not clay, if it's not a piece of linoleum or acrylic paint, mm-hmm, or it can be pixels.
Yeah, I think it's just that everybody, you have a phone, you can take a picture. You have a camera, you can take a picture. Well, give a piece of clay, I can make a bowl. But I can't make a Nancy ball, and I've cut linotype, but I can't do what Leslie does. But, it's all what people find their interest and their path in. And by, making a little bowl or making a linotype print, it gives you the knowledge of what really goes into making a fine piece of pottery or print. And the same is with digital art. That, like I said, I can take a picture. I don't take a Robert Overton picture, but that gives me that much more appreciation for that artist's technique and skill.
Okay, and as Brian had said before, that there is a way that you can leverage all these different areas of the brain to reinforce and supplement each other, and you just come away with a more complete person.
Well, the one thing I like to say is that, look around you. I mean, audience, look at the shirt that Tom Flanagan is wearing here today. He's got Fender specs all over it. Yeah, the blueprint of those guitars. Somebody drew that. Somebody designed the fabric. Somebody designed the table, the microphones, the cars, men's ties. There are designers out there, creative people, that are doing everything in our environment. And people don't see that. That it takes somebody, yes, you have to have chemistry, you have to have science, you have to have math, and then that person takes all of those skills and comes out with the Infinity or the Jaguar or the Fender guitar. You know, it's everywhere we look, eat, breathe, sleep.
That's funny. NPR had a story on that just yesterday about a young lady who was still doing design work by hand with the light box and the translucent paper.
That's
and all
fun,
that. The old school, you know, designing, whether it's a chair or a table or, you know, some utilitarian object. And she was decrying the fact that even that was moving now into the digital realm, and design work was being done on, you know, laptops. And she still wanted that visceral thing of, you know, feeling the paper and having the pencil in her hand and moving it from one place to another. And she felt that something was being lost. But nothing will be lost this weekend, folks. When is the Chain of Parks Art Festival going to be happening on Saturday and Sunday?
10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days. We'll be there, rain or shine. Come on out. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Can't wait to see it. 150-some artists in downtown Tallahassee. Leslie Peebles, Nancy Jefferson, Ann Kozalewski, and, of course, Kelly Dozier, thank you guys for coming on Perspectives today.
Thanks for having us.
Okay,
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll see you
in the park.
Downtown. Yes. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls pushing the buttons and doing the stuff today. I'm Tom Flanagan. We're going to be talking about visual stuff next week, too, on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.